I didn't get much sleep last night either. The lack of sleep is making me wonder whether all these things happening are in my mind or not. But I'm reminded every time I see that damn note that it's all real. I spent hours last night searching for anything I could about Prudence Hemmings, and if she had lived in a big creepy mansion, I imagine she would have been easy to find. But us folks who live in tower blocks aren't so well documented. No one really cares about our lives, no matter how extraordinary. I found an article about a missing person, Lila Hemmings. It suggested that she went missing under the care of her grandmother while playing in the park opposite to the flats early in the morning. Interviews with her parents stated that they had both disowned Prudence. Despite the many years that had passed since Lila's death/disappearance, her parents appear to have remained unforgiving of Prue. There was no mention of her on either of their social media accounts, and she appeared to have no involvement with the children they had acquired since. Searches for the Hemming families in the local area were equally dead ends. I looked at link after link, desperate to find something, but they all started to blur into one, until I finally saw something. An obituary for Bernard Burney Hemmings, who had fallen from the tower block in unexplained circumstances after being diagnosed with dementia months before his death. I was surprised it hadn't made big of news. It had only been about a year, and there was no details of where to find them, but his wife, Prudence, and her sister Bridget were listed as the contacts to get to find out details of the funeral. It's scary what you can do with the internet these days. But with just those phone numbers, I was able to put them into a reverse directory and find an address of Bridget and Tony Bishop, the sister and brother-in-law that Prunus was supposedly living with. About 4 AM, I managed to get some sleep. Not much, though. I was back up and wide awake around 7 AM, planning my route and working out my day, when I saw a post on social media from one of her relatives that Georgia was identified and is stable. This loosened a knot in my stomach that had been present since I found the note somewhere. At 8:50, I opened the door to my flat, hoping to see Postman Ian. 4 minutes had passed, and instead of the postman, an elderly gentleman made his way down the corridor. He had a walking stick and kind eyes, and in his free arm he carried a small plastic bag containing a newspaper and milk. He smiled and said good morning as he passed. I smiled back. He reminded me of my granddad. I imagined him pulling cola cubes from his pocket for his grandkids and shushing them when their parents weren't looking. A little further down the corridor, the old man stopped and turned. He looked me dead in the eyes with a sympathetic expression and spoke. "No pulse on a Sunday, if that's what you're looking for." He smiled knowingly and turned to unlock a front door that until shut I couldn't see the number of. When I saw the door close and the number 48 boldly displayed above the peephole, I understood what Prudence had meant. Mr. Prentice did seem to be a lovely chap. I sat back in my flat and sighed, staring at the various tabs open on my laptop. At about 9:15, the knocking on the balcony door started. The window cleaner was back. I didn't feel half as terrified as I did my first time. If anything, I was just angrier. It took every ounce of restraint I had in my tired body to not engage with him, if only to tell him to fuck off. His genuine seemingly request just irritated me. After about 20 minutes of being watched, the knocking started to give me a headache, so I grabbed a bag and left the flat. I decided there was no time like the present. If I was going to turn up on the bishop's doorstep looking for her sister because of the freaky flat she's left behind, then I just had to get it over with. If the address was old or the bishops weren't the people I was looking for, then I was going to look stupid whatever time of day I went. And I couldn't take the window cleaner's eyes anywhere. There was something about them. They really do want to make you open a door. I looked at the lift as I entered the communal hallway and decided that today I would take the stairs. I couldn't stand to be in a small box that my partner probably died very painfully in. My heart dropped into my stomach just at the sight of it. The stairs were as grotty as the lift. We'd taken them multiple times on move-in day, but I hadn't really taken them in the same way I could now. I thought about the rules and all the strange things happening in this building. I looked at the badly painted numbers on the walls as they reached each landing. Nothing in this building is simple. I looked at the numbers 7, 6, 5, 5, 4, 3, 4, 2, G. Maybe it was a sleep deprivation, but my legs were in agreement with my mind that I definitely just ascended more than 6 flights of stairs. They had glitched. As I turned to exit the building, a woman walked in. She was in her late 30s to early 40s and had 2 small children in tow, 1 boy and 1 girl. I guessed that they were twins. They were both incredibly blonde with deep brown puppy dog looking eyes and couldn't have been any older than 6 to 7. They were as close to identical as it gets in terms of twins of different genders. I'm not a fan of kids, but they were super cute. The lady had a short bum haircut that got longer at the front. It was uniform and dyed a perfectly even auburn color. I knew it was dyed because her roots were blonde like her kids. She looked as tired as I felt, but she pulled herself together when she saw me, running fingers through parts of her hair that she must have missed however early she left this morning. "Hi, are you here visiting?" I opened my mouth trying to make small talk. "No, I just moved into flat 42 on the 7th floor. I was actually just leaving. Whereabouts are you?" I was desperate to go. I had figured myself up to see Prue, but I didn't want to be rude. "I'm flat 26. My name's Terry. This is Eddie and Ellie." She gestured to the 2 small children hiding shyly behind her skirt. "Welcome to the block. If you ever need anything, please feel free to give me a shout." "My name is Katie, but people call me Kat too." "That's really kind of you. Thank you. Hey, is there something wrong with the stairs?" I stopped myself before going into detail. "Nothing wrong, they just skip sometimes," she answered, shrugging. "Well, I'd love to stop and chat, but I actually really need to get going. It was nice to meet you, Terry." I tried to work out what was wrong with the children as I stepped forward to walk away, still baffled by the stairs. "By the way, we have a residence committee. You should come join us to one of our meetings. They're every Tuesday in alternating flats. This Tuesday is at Molly Jefferson's place in flat 41. Come along. We'd love to have you," Terry suggested, waving me off. I walked out the doors, off to my encounter with Terry, feeling sick. Every minute in this place made the note more real. Every word jumped off the page and into my life, made it more likely that Jamie was really gone. I rode the bus from a stop not too far from the flats. It felt like it took an eternity just to reach the little suburban area I was looking for. A 5-minute walk away from the bus stop I got at, and I was staring at a quaint little bungalow belonging to Bridget and Tony Bishop. I knocked on the door. The lady who opened it was unsteady on her feet. She was probably in her late 70s with wispy white hair, neatly scraped back into a bun. 2 strands left hanging that just softened her wrinkled face. She wore a dusty rose-colored dress that hung just below her knees and smelled of stale cigarette smoke. "Can I help you?" she asked me bluntly. "My name is Kat. I'm looking for Prudence Hemmings." Her eyes widened slightly. "Why?" she asked bizarrely. "Is she here? It's private." The lady ushered me into the house and sat me down on a sofa. Within minutes, there was a cup of tea in front of me. She didn't say anything to me for a while. We just looked at each other. But then, she finally broke the silence. "I wondered if you'd try and find me. It took me a long time to decide whether to leave that note or not. But I decided that you deserved a good head start. That's more than I ever got." The woman was Prudence. She was nothing like I had imagined. She seemed tough and hardened and spoke with a mostly blunt tone. She contributed before I could answer. "Terry called me not too long ago. Told me that she had met the new tenant. She did say he looked shaken up, and said that my note may have not been enough. I did say it didn't fit everything on there, and the stairs didn't seem too important. The committee wanted to organize a meeting with you on your move-in day, but I told them that was intrusive. The whole committee thing always seemed a bit excessive to me anyways. She spoke flippantly, like it was nothing. It may have been intrusive, but we needed a warning. We spent a night in the place before I found your note. My boyfriend had already left for work at 3:15 and taken the lift. He didn't know. I broke as I told her what had happened. Her face dropped and so did my hope for Jamie. I'm so sorry, I really don't know what to say. I thought my note would reach you in time, she mumbled, her face to the floor, refusing to look at me as tears streamed down my face. He's gone, isn't he? I didn't want to accept it, but I spoke to the postman and your face says all that it needs to. The postman said there might be a way I can have him back. I bit at her, devastated and angry. He's gone, and you can't have him back. What Ian is referring to isn't what you think. There's a way to get people back from the lift, but not as themselves. Trust me, I learned the hard way. Once they go back, you can't reverse it. I'm sorry about your man, but he's gone forever. Don't dig into the other way. To be gone forever is luckier than the alternative. And she still won't look up from the floor. What do you mean? I don't want to talk about it. I said in a note that there are things I'd rather not discuss, and I need you to respect that, or I won't be speaking to you at all. Now move on and ask what you need to ask. Prudence cut me off. I decided not to push the topic further, and I moved on to some other things that I needed to know. What's the deal with Terry's kids? They seem sweet and normal. Those little demon creatures are anything but normal, she answered, wincing slightly at the thought of them. When she went into labor, Terry never made it to a hospital. They were the first children ever to be born inside the building. And with everything that goes on, it's like something's rubbed off on them. They're average children in the daytime, but they never sleep. Ever. Poor Terry hasn't had a day's rest since they were born. They also really love to steal birds and rats, and they find the cats playing with and torment them. It really annoys the cats. As she finished speaking, a small hairless cat strutted out from behind an armchair across the room, meowing softly. It brushed its head up against Bruce's exposed legs, leaving scorch marks where it touched. She didn't react. She reached down and stroked the top of its head, smiling as it purred. And those? I asked. My eyes stuck to her now badly burned legs. She chuckled and pulled out a dish and lit a cigarette, tapping the top layer of ash into a small silver dish in front of her. She offered me one and I took it gladly. They've always been my good friends. I couldn't leave the building without bringing a part of home with me. This little guy is Damon. He's seen some things, she gushed, not taking her eyes off the cat. Where did they come from and why are they everywhere? I asked. I watched her in disbelief as her burn subsided. It seemed impossible, but I looked at my arms where I had picked up the cat the night before, and there was no evidence that it ever happened. They didn't even appear sunburnt. No one really knows. They started to appear after the fire, a few years after I'd moved in. It was rumored that they were the pets of the residents that burned, and that's why they had no fur. But I don't think that's true, I interrupted. I met one of those neighbors last night. She said her name was Natalia. She almost killed my best friend. You're crazy if you think your note was enough of a warning, I ranted emotionally. Look, girl, if I had made a song and a dance about warning you, then you would have thought me crazy and challenged the rules. You'd have been dead already. Be grateful you got anything, because I didn't. I had to work it all out. Your generation is so spoiled. She tutted in frustration at me. I was angry, but she was probably right. An elderly lady telling me rat-like creatures would kill my boyfriend on a lift would have probably gotten some loss from me a few days ago. I stayed quiet and I waited for her to calm down. And after a while, she sighed and started again. I think the cats are the neighbors that burned. They never meant any harm, and they hiss and run from the imposters that roam the building. Besides, there's no way that many cats are living on one floor. The imposter people don't even match up with the residents that died in the fire. None of them look like or claim to have the same name as the dead. They just claim to live in their flats. I've met Natalia before. She left a bad scar on Bernie's leg from an incident we had. Nasty girl. Before the fire, there was CCTV, and there was a recording saved of about 15 people marching into the flats and up to that floor about half an hour before the fire started. It was the only evidence found. And CCTV wasn't great in the 80s, so they were never identified. And the flames melted the relevant cameras, so nothing ever came of it. I think the people that entered that night are the ones that asked for sugar. I don't know any more than that, but if you can avoid them, like I said, you don't need to know more. They hate the cats. I hope your friend survives, but I've seen what those people can do, so maybe she was better off dead. Prue carried on, stroking Damon. I watched the skin of her fingers melt and twist as they made contact with him. What happened to your husband? I asked the question so fast, I didn't even have time to consider that this was a topic. She had explicitly said she didn't want to discuss in a note, but I had to know. She just scowled at me. I said I didn't want to talk about that. She hissed. I just lost the love of my life, please, I need some answers. What happened to Bernie won't help you. I know you think that any deaths in the building would be down to the quirks, but this wasn't. For the most part, anyways. Don't forget that we lived there for 35 years. Bernie knew the rules. We knew how to take care of ourselves and have a happy life there. It was our home. I don't doubt that, Miss Hemmings. I'm sorry, I interjected. Bernie had dementia. It started about 6 months before he died, and he deteriorated very rapidly. Towards the end, he started wandering. The doctor said it was common, but in our position, it was incredibly dangerous. More times than I can count, I had to pull him away from the lift just in time. Along with wandering, he was forgetting the rules. He let that smug, awful window cleaner in 3 times, and thank Lord for that big metal pipe I kept by the balcony door. I chased him out a treat. Not that anything stops him from coming back. I'm sure you're already acquainted. After all, the most dangerous situations Bernie was in, by the end he made the smallest and most fatal of errors. He left a bowl of food out for Damon at 10 a.m. I was out shopping with Terry and a few of the girls in the committee, and when I came back, I found one of those awful creatures. Prudence started to cry. I put my hand on her shoulder in an attempt to comfort her. After all, I truly knew how she felt. I was eating him. She sniffled and steadied herself to continue, moving my hand away. I chased the creature away with the same metal pipe I had the window cleaner and pushed Bernie up the balcony. He was heavy, but I didn't want anyone to know what really killed him. Its teeth. She shivered. They made such an awful noise, it reminded me of... Lila. I finished her sentence. I hadn't meant to. I was so invested in her story that I couldn't help it. I never you spoke of Ian then, she said, sounding resigned. I never meant to hurt that little girl, I loved her so much. Damon, who was now sat next to her on the sofa, shuffled closer to her as if to cuddle her. Tears rolled down her wrinkled cheeks. Haven't you ever been curious about getting her back? I asked. My mind was turning back to the methods hinted at both Prue and the postman. I miss Jamie so much, I'd do anything to get him back. Her face filled with a look of horror and shame. Of course I have, she answered. Which is exactly why I'm telling you not to. But I couldn't let it go. Surely anything must be better than gone forever. I pestered, but thinking back on it, I really wished that I hadn't. Prudence, frustrated, stood up and gestured for me to follow. She led me outside into the back garden of the bungalow, and at the back was a large shed, the kind people used for a man cave or a summer house. It was pretty. The sun shone down on it, lighting up a few cobwebs in the corner, making them twinkle. Miss Hemmings was careful to look into both neighboring gardens to ensure that there was no one around before she unlocked the door to the shed. We stepped inside, and the first thing that hit me was the smell. It was putrid, like running meat. And I looked at the floor and it covered my nose with my hands, staring back at me as a pool of blood. And then I followed the blood of my eyes as Pernas locked us in the shed. But just then, after I had made a past the animal bones, I finally saw it. Just like what Postman Ian had described. There it was. One of the creatures was watching me from a heavy-duty metal cage. A metal dog cage in the corner of the shed. It looked reinforced, but still, the metal had chew marks. Their jaws had to be strong to cause that. But that didn't surprise me, looking at it. Its rodent-like nose, beady, yet somehow human-like eyes. They were nothing compared to the two very visible rows of jagged, sharp teeth that lined each gum. And despite its small stature, it was terrifying. Prudence opened the drawer in a dusty cupboard across the room and pulled out a can of dog food. She poured the contents into the bowl and passed the bowl through the feeding hatch. We couldn't assess the food until the hatch was locked from the outside. I was eternally grateful for this. Prey turned to me and spoke. She brushed off one of the two strands of hair framing her face behind her ear. She gestured to the hideous creature and she said, "Cat, I would like to introduce you to my granddaughter, Lila."